This episode will be shorter than usual because it's a follow-up to the previous episode on Augustine and treats just with his magnum opus De Civitate Dei in Latin. In English, The City of God. Augustine labored on this work for 14 years. It's the epitome of Latin Christian apologetics and has been called the blueprint of the Middle Ages, making its author Augustine the architect of the Middle Ages. Now, in it, that is The City of God, we see the brilliance and scope of Augustine's mind. We also see his pastoral instinct. For the work is really an attempt to comfort and encourage not just Christians, but all citizens of the Roman Empire at a time when their world was literally crumbling around them. Crumbling because barbarians were running amok in the Western Empire. While aimed directly at the followers of Jesus, it held forth hope to pagan Romans that if they would convert to Christianity, the comfort offered God's people would be theirs as well. The work began as a response to the spirit-shattering looting of Rome by the Goths in 410. At the time, Rome was largely a living ruin, and no longer the capital. That honor had shifted to Constantinople, far to the east. Be that as it may, Rome still held a sentimental place as the birthplace of Roman civilization. It was more symbol than substance, but symbols carry powerful emotional attachments, as we all know. Seeing or even just hearing that it had been violated by people that in its heyday could have been easily crushed seemed a travesty of cosmic proportions. Devout pagans were sure that Rome had been violated as judgment because the traditional gods and goddesses who'd overseen Rome's rise had been set aside in favor of the new kid in town, Jesus. If people would forsake the old deities, pagans said, those deities would do more than just forsake the people, they judge them by opening the doors to their enemies. Augustine began The City of God as a reply to that. It developed into a complete philosophy of history, an eloquent apologetic for what would come to be known as the providential view of history. Augustine posited two cities. One represented the world, the other heaven. These two cities reflect two loves. The world city was built on the love of self, while the city of God is the realm of love of and for God. The book begins with a refutation of pagan attacks on Christianity. The next section elaborates on hints in the first section in Augustine's philosophy of history. He describes the origin, progress, and the end of both cities. And when I say city, think society. Better, think all that goes into a community living together with a shared sense of values, language, and customs. All of that drawn from a fundamental understanding of reality. We might say that Augustine describes the difference between the worldviews of the world city and God's city. Now, that may sound as though Augustine posits the two cities as ever distinct. That's not really the case. He sets them as they are manifest in the world, often mixed in both concept and form, and though mixed, well, ever at odds because the loves animating them are irreconcilable. In The City of God, we witness the evolution of his thought and theology. This is something that academics take great interest in. Indeed, it gets right to the heart of some of the interpretations of the Apostle Paul's New Testament letters, yielding one of the thorniest debates in the church for both Protestants and Roman Catholics. And it has to do with the debate as it's classically framed between Calvinism and Arminianism, though really those terms fall short of the positions backing each side of the controversy. While the debate has been put to rest in the Roman Catholic Church, it may surprise modern Catholics to hear that there was a time when their theologians had their own contentious debate over the very things that Protestants still wrangle over. We'll get to that in a much later episode. For now, it's enough to note that The City of God shows the evolution of Augustine's thoughts from some of his earlier writings. Now, we expect people to grow and to change, but it can be unnerving when a theologian gives an essay speaking authoritatively on a subject, and then 5 or 6 years later does a 180-degree flip on the same subject. As I shared in the previous episode, in earlier works, Augustine laid out a pattern for history as progressing from before the law and then under the law, and then under grace, and then finally in peace. Now, these periods of redemptive history lined up with the individual believer's spiritual path. But Augustine also charted seven periods of history based on the creation week. Five were during the period covered by the Old Testament, one in the New Testament, and the seventh being in the millennium, which was yet to come, which Augustine said came immediately after Jesus' second coming. But in the City of God, Augustine's idea of history was amillennial. He said that the 1,000 years of Revelation chapter 20 was symbolic, either of the entire church age or the ultimate summation of history. Now, that view replaced his prior literal millennial eschatology. That was, until that point in history, the position of the church. This amillennial position ended up becoming the dominant view in Roman, Latin, Western Christianity until the Reformation, and even then remained the eschatological position of many Protestants. While devout pagans attributed the sack of Rome to the judgment by the gods, Christians were mystified how God could allow rank heretics like Arian Goss to humble Catholic Rome. Well, Augustine began his response in 413, 3 years after the disaster. It took him some 14 years to complete because, well, one thought led to another and then to another, and so on. One of Augustine's prodigies, named Paulus Orosius, was quicker on the draw. He published an apologetic for why Rome had fallen called History Against the Pagans. Orosius's argument was that history has been a chronicle of disasters. The victims who witnessed them usually deemed them the greatest catastrophes of all. But, said Orosius, since the coming of Christ, the world had become more peaceful. As the gospel spread, it first brought peace between God and man, and then between man and man. Well, if only Orosius could have seen what horrors lay ahead in history. His work may have brought temporary relief and perspective, but it was swept aside when Augustine's work was finally published. Though the Goth sack of Rome sparked Augustine's composition, he followed Orosius' example and used it to describe a wider philosophy of history. Augustine pondered the core problem, and that's evil. What is its cause? What is the nature of evil? And how can evil exist when God is who and what he is? All good, all powerful and wise, all loving. Augustine concludes that evil is not a thing in itself. Rather, it's the bending or the twisting of a thing, a distortion of good. It's the non-existence of the essence of what the thing is supposed to be, as planned by God in its creation. It is, as he said, quote, the loss of the good, unquote. Now put this way, good and evil are not opposites. Evil is the distortion of the good. If there was no good, there would be no evil because there'd be nothing to distort. You know, darkness is not the opposite of light. It's the absence of light. And so for Augustine, sin is an irrational defiling of the good. It's understandable why Augustine settled on this description of evil. It was likely fired by his repudiation of the 9 years that he had spent in Manichaeanism. They set all reality as a near eternal battle between good and evil, between darkness and light. It's only at the halfway point in the City of God that Augustine gets around to defining the two cities. He shows how the contest between the world city and the God city has been going on throughout history. Indeed, it's history's engine, its motive force. Human society is the product that's come from the crucible of that conflict between the world city and the God city. While the real City of God is a fixture of the spiritual realm, Augustine says that the church is its earthly representative, a kind of institutional ambassador inside the world city. While the City of God is above, its citizens live below. It may be said that Augustine was incautious in clarifying and qualifying himself in this regard. Sometimes he says that the institutional church is not now equivalent to the City of God, but at other times, when speaking of it, he seems to say that it is. At those times, Augustine is likely being idealistic rather than realistic. Unfortunately, later churchmen will take Augustine's words and use them injudiciously to assume for the church rights and powers that it has never meant to have, The entire concept of a Holy Roman Empire with a Holy Roman Emperor is one such movement, and it's being resurrected today in the call for Christian nationalism.